Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Well, there goes everything I planned to talk about here the first hour. Straight out the window with this announcement about 20 minutes ago. Well, the announcement wasn't 20 minutes ago, but I just got word of it. Standard & Poor's has decided to downgrade the U.S. credit rating for the first time in the nation's history. More on that in a second. First, I want to mention this hour is sponsored by Jim, who writes, "Happy 39th anniversary, Janice. I love you. Ooh. Thanks, Mike and Kathy, for all you do." Well, that's very kind, Jim. So Jim Small is writing to Janice. "Happy 39th anniversary. I love you. I love you!" He loves you. He loves you. Remember that song? "I love you. I love you," said the little green man. Happy 39th anniversary, Janice. I love you too. How's that? All right. But the one who really counts, Jim, wishes you a happy anniversary. Thanks, Jim. Very sweet. Thanks for the sponsorship. And also, as we've been mentioning all this week, and next week, the program, these 2 weeks, underwritten by Farm Aid 2011 and BioWilly and the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. As you also know, because I've been talking about it a lot, this is the 25th or 26th year that Willie Nelson and friends have put together Farm Aid to help keep family farmers on their land. We'll be talking more about it. So, now let's get one thing real clear here. First of all, just the facts, ma'am, just the facts. Although the way it's reported in the Washington Post kind of pisses me off. But Standard & Poor's announced tonight it has downgraded the U.S. credit rating for the first time in U.S. history. According to the Post, the move came even though the Treasury Department said that it had found a math error in the firm's calculations of deficit projections. That's according to a person familiar with the matter. S&P decided to lower the AAA rating held by the United States for 70 years to AA+. After the debt deal signed into law this week failed to assuage concerns about the nation's growing spending. About the nation's growing spending. So that's what Standard & Poor's is concerned about. How about the nation's unequal taxation program? See, Standard & Poor's has secondary, tertiary, all kinds of other interests here. As a matter of fact, were I the Obama administration, I would probably give the finger to Standard & Poor's and tell them to piss off. But you see, you can't do that because so many people around the globe look to these bond rating agencies to make decisions based on, allegedly, deep scrutiny into the companies or the operations of which they're rating. But that's not how Standard & Poor's works. We'll get to that in a second, too. Anyway, analysts have said that a downgrade, if it were to happen, which apparently it has, could increase the cost of borrowing for the U.S. government. That will lead to tens of billions of extra dollars in interest costs per year. This is what the Republican teabaggers, this is what roughly 60 people gave 330 million of us. Okay? What should happen to them? I'd like to say, but I would probably lose my broadcast license. Anyway, the cost of borrowing, the cost of your the interest rate on your credit cards are probably going to go up. If you want to buy a car and pay for it over a period of time, interest rate going to go up. Interest rates for housing, probably going to go up. This is what these goddamn teabaggers have done. This is what, and Standard & Poor's. I mean, what Standard & Poor's wanted was $4 trillion reduction in spending. That's what they wanted. That's what they wanted. So the deal struck, although it's a bunch of bull crap, The deal struck was not $4 trillion in deficit reduction over the next 10 years, but $2.1 trillion over 10 years, half of what Standard & Poor's wanted as they attempted to blackmail the entire country. Oh, God. Standard & Poor's had warned the Obama administration several times this year that unless the government took steps to get its debt down, its credit rating could be lowered. Now, the UK, Canada, I don't know how many other countries have a better credit rating than the United States. Okay, well, that's cool. Good on you, Canada. This is the same company, Standard & Poor's, that gave good ratings to all those collateral debt organizations, good ratings to thieves, shysters, punks that then turned around and destroyed the economy. This is the same Standard & Poor's that assisted in setting our country and the world up for this financial crash that occurred in 2007-2008. This company, Standard & Poor's. Now, Standard & Poor's, the losses on these collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. Let me back up. Investors who trusted the low-risk profile that AAA implies, AAA ratings that Standard & Poor's dumped on that CDO market. Oh, yeah, everybody get on board. This is going to be a gravy train. Anyway, a lot of people purchased large amounts of CDOs that later became unsellable. In other words, they're not worthless. They represent debt. So they do have some worth, if you can think that way. Those that could be sold took staggering losses. For instance, losses on $340 million, a third of $1 billion worth of CDOs issued by Credit Suisse Group, added up to about $125 million despite being rated AAA by Standard & Poor's. In April 2009, Standard & Poor's called for new faces in the Irish government, which was seen as interfering in the democratic process of that country. And in a statement after they caught hell, they said they were misunderstood. You lying sons of bitches. Isn't capitalism fun? Isn't this fun? Woo! Yeah! Are you going to win from this? Are you going to win from the rabid dogs that now own the U.S. Congress? And they're little punks that sit there and destroy us? Do you have any doubt now? I guess some of you still do. Oh, well. In November 2009, 10 months after launching an investigation, the European Commission formally charged Standard & Poor's with abusing its position as the sole provider of international securities identification codes for U.S. securities by requiring European financial firms and data vendors to pay them for the use. The European Commission said in a statement, this behavior amounts to unfair pricing. The numbers are indispensable for a number of operations that financial institutions carry out and cannot be sustained without them. I mean, it just goes on and on. I would not really call Standard & Poor's AAA rated, if you know what I mean. They're a bunch of goddamn capitalist thieves, liars, sneaks, crooks like the rest of these people. And because Obama and the Democrats didn't, it wasn't even Obama. Obama offered $4 trillion in cuts. The Republican, Obama, the arch-conservative, Obama, whose task it was to destroy 80 years of Democratic social safety net programs. Obama offered $4 million in cuts, exactly what Standard & Poor's wanted, and these dumb goddamn Republicans walked away. Because in that $4 trillion cut were some tax increases for the upper one-tenth of 1%. Go effing figure.
Blown the game, cut down to size, no alibis, and you know that nothing's ever going to be the same? Do you change your way or just go down in flame? What do you do after you've blown the game?
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
The hour. Quick update. Prairie 2 sent me something tonight. But he has an update. I'll give you the update first. Prairie 2 says, after hours, Standard & Poor's, the debt rating agency who had no problem rating a variety of subprime debt as AAA during the reign of the Bush crime family, debt that was in fact, and to their knowledge, absolutely worthless, has downgraded the sovereign debt of the United States of America by one step to AA plus. This puts us on, puts the United States on a par with some Caribbean countries and Eastern European principalities that raise sheep. Oh, laugh, Malloy. From Kathy in Maine, Standard & Poor's is just another corporate overlord that wants to dictate what our government does to the country. The debt ceiling was one thing they wanted, and they got it. All that crap is what she's referring to. Now they want more cuts. Or did they want the debt ceiling? I don't know. Now they want more cuts to the poor and middle class programs, but nothing to cut out of their buddies' pockets on Wall Street or their ability to go on raping the American population. They are substandard and very, very poor. Oh, that's a play on Standard and Poor's. I like that, Kathy. They are substandard and very, very poor, or at least that's what they want all of us to be. Yeah, I wouldn't, you know, in a rational world, I wouldn't pay any attention to this nonsense. But we don't live in a rational world. We live in a society, a world that is slowly choking to death on predatory capitalism. It is going to destroy us. There is no question here. It's a combination of the political and economic system, but the political system is now owned by the overlords of capitalism. They own it outright. They own who is selected to run. They own the process by which we laughingly go make our choice as to which of these clowns, these corporate bastards, will wind up ruling over us for 8 years or 4 years or whatever. They own it. This cannot be reformed. Now, I know a lot of people say, yeah, I can. Well, I don't have time for a reformation, frankly. And I don't believe it can be reformed. I believe it has to be pulled down and replaced. But who am I, right? Paul is in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening on 950 AM. Hello, Paul.
Michael, it's an honor to talk to you again.
Oh, yeah, I'm thrilled. Hi, Paul.
It's Paul.
Paul? Okay. Hi, Paul.
I called you last year a while ago.
Yes.
I miss you. I just got back from a vacation back in my country in Laos.
Really? How long were you in Laos?
I was there 2.5 months.
And how does it feel to be back?
It feels good, you know. It feels really, really, really good to be back in the world's greatest country on earth.
Well,
and,
maybe.
Well, to you maybe, but to me, I love this country, even though I'm not from here, but I love this country.
Well, I hope you continue, but didn't this country kill an inordinate number of Laotians and destroy part of your country back in the 60s and early 70s?
Yeah, but I wasn't even born in that time, so I was born in the 80s. So
I see.
I came here when I was 15. And what I want to tell you is that I went over there and I try to listen to you online 3 days a week. And I love enjoying your show. And since I got back, you know, my Republican and conservative friend asked me,
uh-huh,
hey, Paul, how do you feel about the government doing the TSA doing the screening on your private body at the airport. And I don't understand this Republican anti-bagger. George Bush took us to an illegal war just to keep the American people safe, but President Obama cannot do the screening at the airport to keep us safe. I don't get it.
Well, Paul, you raised several issues. First of all, I don't even know where to begin, man. I really don't. It would take me an hour to answer just that multi-part statement you just made, or question, and we just don't have time to do it. I think maybe, you live here, you love this country, you left and came back, and you know, I certainly respect you for that, but you might need to do a little more research on the Obama administration. And in the first place, it's not Obama that ordered the devices that X-ray and screen you. Those devices come from a company that was owned by the former director of Homeland Security here, the guy who looks like Satan, Chertoff. And we have a lot of those people in this country who look like Satan. All I can say, Paul, is just do a little more research. We'll talk again, pal. Thanks for checking in.
To the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. And before I get into this crazy stuff again, I want to mention once again, this hour is sponsored by Jim Small, whose message is to Janice, his wife. Happy 39th anniversary, Janice. I love you. You know, every time I see those words, Kay had it the other night for her husband, Jim. Every time I see, I love you. Aren't those three lovely little words? I love you. Thanks, Mike and Kathy, for all you do. Well, Jim, thanks a lot for the sponsorship. The downgrading issued by Standard & Poor's in the statement, I don't have the statement in front of me, but I heard Rachel reading part of it on her program several minutes ago on MSNBC, and the calculus apparently that was used by Standard & Poor's has to do with the politics, the dysfunction of the political system. Well, okay, fair is fair. But I thought Standard & Poor's was supposed to rate things, entities, based on their ability to stand behind or guarantee whatever financial hocus-pocus was being committed. Of course, Standard & Poor's has shown itself to be incapable of doing that. John in Raleigh writes, as you said, the ratings agency stood aside when the subprime stuff went on, but now they suddenly find some kind of financial morality and are upset at the U.S. debt ceiling? Right. You remember months ago when some were seeking to sue the ratings agencies for their silence or their maintaining AAA ratings across the board, and it was put forth by the agencies that their ratings were a matter of free speech and thus no laws were broken? I'm beyond pissed off at this and sense that you are too. Yet our financial system here and globally is 1,000% dysfunctional. Yes, it is. Thanks, John and Raleigh. Yes, it is. It is totally dysfunctional. And I can't help it, even though I truly believe that capitalism is dying and it's pulling down not just American empire, but it's pulling down the financial base of so many countries that are strictly capitalist. Now, that excludes a lot of our trading partners in a lot of the countries in the European Union. It includes some of them, yes, and even the ones that are mixed economy, it includes them too. There is an event occurring globally that is showing itself here at the beginning with just little ripples on the surface of this body of water, little ripples. And we're not able to read those ripples and say, Jesus Christ Almighty, there is a tsunami coming. And I don't know why we're not able. I mean, a lot of people are reading it that way and have been trying and trying and trying to warn and warn. It's got to stop. But every time someone like that opens his or her mouth, they're immediately labeled America hater, socialist, communist. Okay. Hold on to your asses, folks, because this is going to be a very rough ride. Not that it's going to start Monday, although oh my God. With the credit rating of the United States reduced now below, for the first time ever, well, this has only been going on. I guess this credit rating crapola has only been going on for 70 or 80 years. But for the first time in the history of the country, it's been reduced now. So what do you think that's going to mean? The potential here is a crash, a total crash of the American economy. Now, regardless how much we criticize it, you and I, it is still the largest economy on earth. If it crashes, does anyone out there, let me see a show of hands, anyone out there think that the ripple effect will not pull down innumerable other economies? So what we're looking, remember what I was talking about last night or the night before, standing on the edge of the abyss? But I still have confidence it will pull back. That confidence just had a bullet put right, not necessarily in the middle of its heart, but over here on the left ventricle, maybe. And Standard & Poor's, one of the chief operating engines of this global financial disaster, has now downrated the U.S.? Okay. I'm not going to sit here and defend, now that I've been criticizing for 20 years, I'm not going to sit here and defend the poisonous treachery of capitalism. I'm not going to do it. You know, Standard & Poor's and U.S. capitalists and global investors and so on and so forth can all rot in hell. I mean, pull it down then. And maybe the second time we'll build something that makes a little bit of sense. But it's like Caesar. It's like the Ides of March. And you, Brutus, at 2 Standard & Poor's? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, I don't mean that in the literal sense. It's very believable. I guess the disaster capitalism that Naomi Klein... It was Naomi Klein, right? Wrote about is what the predatory capitalists are waiting to see happen. If the global economy collapses, now I'm not talking about a couple of countries going bankrupt or trying desperately to find investors to buy Greece's debt, for example. No. If the entire global economy collapses, there will be the first wave of death and destruction will come from people dying because they're starving to death or can't get medical care. Then there will be the rioting inside various countries as a desperate scramble for whatever resources they can get their hands on. You remember the scene. Do you see these scenes any place where people only want to survive and they break into stores and supermarkets? And that's referred to by the capitalists as looting. By the people doing it, it's called, I've got to eat. Of course, some people take advantage of it, but you know, how far can you carry a 50-inch a television when water's up to your neck? So the first wave of death and destruction will come that way. And then the second wave will come when governments decide, well, wait a second, hold on. We can't survive with just the area we've got. There was a word for that, too. It comes from the German, Anschluss. Is that the right word? So then what happens? In the chaos, Pakistan, who has been chomping at the bit to nuke India back to the, I don't know, to prehistory. Do you think Pakistan will hesitate? And what about China? Once China sees Pakistan launching nuclear bombs, what do you think China's going to do? Sit there and go, oh, well, they'll never come this way. Oh, Malloy, you're just out of your mind tonight. You know, this stuff isn't going to happen. It's not going to happen. What are you talking about? Nah. Bruce writes, when the teabagger sees the ocean suddenly drain out of the harbor, he thinks, ah, free fish. Jesus, God. Well, I'm glad Bruce can find some humor here, because I damn sure can't. I don't know, man. I don't know. I got to get off this topic. Okay, we all know what happened. We all know blah, blah, blah. Let's just wait and see what happens when the Asian markets open on Monday. And shortly after that, the European markets. Right? Let's do that. All right, we have a rake here. We're going to come back and take these calls regarding of this topic. And then if you don't mind, I just want to move the hell on. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I can't deal with this. I mean, I can deal with it. I can't deal with it because I'm utterly powerless. I know how to deal with it. I do. I really, really, really do. I mean, between Krugman and Prairie 2 and Michael and Roswell and me, we'll be right back.
So you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
Well, that's not really true, Kathy. I don't watch it anymore. I can't stand it. This hour has been sponsored by Jim Small, He writes, happy 39th anniversary, Janice. I love you. Thanks, Mike and Kathy, for all you do. Thanks, Jim, for the sponsorship and the sweet message to Janice. It's very kind. And also, our underwriter for this program all this week and all next week is Farm Aid 2011. Since 1985, Willie Nelson of Farm Aid had worked to keep family farmers on their land because family farmers are our best and maybe at some point last resource for good food, good health, and a strong economy. This year's concert, Farm Aid 2011, is Saturday, week from tomorrow, August 13th, in Kansas City, Kansas. And Farm Aid folks urge you to tell your senators it's time to support family farmers and ranchers. For decades, family farmers and ranchers who raise livestock have endured abuses from corporate giants that control the market. Amen to that. Visit farmaid.org and fill out the form to let your senator know you want him or her to support independent farms and ranches instead of corporate agribusinesses. Can you do that? And also, tonight's program is brought to you by BioWillie and the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. Music legend. Sounds so stupid saying that. Everybody knows that. Willie Nelson started BioWillie, a biodiesel company that mitigates the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. Biodiesel is a renewable and sustainable fuel which reduces dependence on foreign oil. And because it's locally produced, it promotes community development. So ask your fuel supplier when BioWillie will be available in your area. BioWillie Diesel, made in America, stayed in America. Amen and amen. I want to get to prayer two here in a moment. Richard is in Charlotte, North Carolina, listening on XM. Hello, Richard.
Hey, Mike. Been listening to you for a long time. Got a comment and a question.
Sure.
A comment. You did the greatest radio segment ever that I've ever heard. You had an ice pick stabbing it into your thigh listening to a right winger.
Yeah, I remember.
That was the greatest radio experience ever.
Well, thanks, Richard. That was a long time ago.
What'd you do with the ice pick?
It's still here. It's got, you know, dried blood on it. It's just sitting here. I try to keep it out of reach now.
Okay, and I got a question, but I might have already answered it.
Okay.
If you was a credit agency yourself, looking at America honestly, how would you rate it?
Well, if I had to rate it based on what is occurring here, if I had to rate the credit worthiness of the United States, regardless of my contempt for predatory capitalism, I'd have to, if you're going to play in the game, then you got to play by the rules. So I'd have to give the United States a AAA plus. I'd give it the highest rating. I mean, we don't default. People in this country can starve to death. Mothers and children can wind up with anemia or diseases brought about by poor nutrition. Old people can be turned out of Medicaid-funded nursing homes because there's, quote, no money. But no matter what, the United States government, because, you know, they order money to be printed. They can get the Federal Reserve on the phone and say, print me a trillion. So based on the way the game is played and the rules that they use to play it, I'd have to give it a top rating. I mean, not that I'd want to, but I can't stand outside the game and say, well, I'm going to impose my rules. You understand what I'm saying there?
Yes, but let me give you some words of thought.
Okay.
If China's credit rating was dropped, they got so much infrastructure that they would just bulldoze right over top of it and not even affect the markets.
Right.
But just the thought that the credit agency is going to downgrade us is probably going to mean that the stock market is going to fail because, I mean, if you look at those two things in your head, it would make no sense to downgrade China because it would just bulldoze right over top of it. Our bulldozers are sitting over there idling
right
and rusting.
Well, no, I understand that, but it feels like that's the second part of a question or a new question altogether. I'm just trying to answer what you said. How would I, if I had the power, to rate the credit worthiness of the United States where it concerns its debt? That's all we're talking about here, is the debt that the United States owes to its own people and to foreign investors, based on the fact that the U.S. has never really, truly defaulted. I would have to, I mean, until someone, if you or I default on one of our bills or default to the point where we have to go into bankruptcy court, then our credit score is going to plunge. But as long as we pay our bills properly and handle our debt properly, we may be ass over elbows in debt, Richard, we individuals, but as long as we handle it properly and pay it the way it's supposed to be paid, we maintain a fairly good credit score. That's all I'm saying. As long as the United States, sovereign United States, pays its debts, pays its bills, I'd have to give it a top rating. I don't have any choice unless I want to be a jerk and say, okay, I'm going to step outside the game and impose my own rules. I want to see predatory capitalism come to an end. Don't misunderstand me. But as long as that game, is being played, and if I'm asked to referee the game, then I've got a referee by the rules that are in place. I hope that makes sense, Richard, because I'm not an apologist for these creeps. But on the other hand, you just can't walk into somebody else's game and start slashing it. Well, I guess you could. But anyway, Richard, I got to go. Thanks, man. I appreciate you. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. We'll be right back. The hour. This is the Malloy program. Did you know in states where gay marriage has been made legal, or I should say same-sex marriage has been made legal, the divorce rate is lower than in states that have refused to allow same-sex couples to form a marriage contract? Huh? You like that? Tomorrow is the endless anniversary of the bombing, the nuclear bombing of the first city in Japan to feel that horror. And on Monday is the anniversary of the second city in Japan to feel that horror. And we'll talk about it Monday night. I don't want you to think I'm not going to acknowledge it like I do every year. This hour is brought to you by Farm Aid 2011. Not this hour. I shouldn't say that. The whole program is underwritten by Farm Aid 2011 and all next week. Willie Nelson and Farm Aid have worked to keep family farmers on their land since 1985. You know all about it. If you're of a certain age, you remember back in the mid-80s what prompted Farm Aid to begin. Foreclosures, auctions, suicides. Farmers! Farmers. Astonishing. And by BioWilly and the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. We're going to talk about that next week. So anyway, thanks to everybody at FarmAid and Willie and Annie Nelson for pulling this together and underwriting this program for 2 weeks. Thanks, folks. We appreciate it. back to the political mood made by Standard & Poor's. This is, believe me, it's all tied together. You know it is as well as I do. The actions by these Republican pigs, when the pigs were offered even more than they had ever hoped in their wildest fantasies to get from any government of the United States, and Obama offered it to him, $4 million in cuts, coupled with to lower the deficit, coupled with a handful of pissy little tax loopholes being closed, and perhaps an uptick, a little, well, 1 or 2 percentage points on the utter absolute wealthy, the oligarchs in this country. And the Republicans walked away from the deal. So Standard & Poor's said, look, we demanded $4 trillion in cuts. You're not going to give it to us. We're going to downgrade the entire country. I frankly think Standard & Poor's ought to be kicked out of the United States. Throw the son of a bitches in the ocean. Just take them out beyond the sovereign limit of the United, what is it now, 200 miles? And drop the bastards overboard. Just do it. Don't think about it. If you think about it, some kind of weird morality will kick in. Just do it! Malloy advocates murder of thousands of Standard & Poor's employees. Oh, my God. This job's driving me insane. I mean, it really is. It's just driving my ass insane. And what is Michael? Who is it says their tagline is never let anyone drive you insane when it's within walking distance? From Bruce Enberg. Even besides the inherent ability of the U.S. corporate, the U.S. to generate wealth, what I was talking about last hour, even in addition to the ability of the U.S. to generate wealth, not counting its ability to print money that other countries just continue to accept, the assets of the U.S. government itself in terms of public lands that hold vast natural resources far outstrips this dinky-ass $14 trillion in debt we have. That's not an issue. I'm adding to what Prairie 2 wrote. He goes on. Privatizing these public assets are, of course, the ultimate goal of the neo-feudalists driving this totally manufactured crisis. And P.S. for the teabaggers, they see you as property as well, Mr. and Mrs. Surf. S-C-R-F. No, I'm just irritated because this is not the downfall of capitalism. Capitalism is not going to have a downfall. It's going to have to be pulled down. Because in addition to predatory capital, you have all sorts of capitalism. Predatory, disaster capitalism is the one that has been honed to an absolute skill now. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, with Iraq, with Afghanistan, with this, with that, with Haiti, with, it doesn't make any difference what the country is. A disaster, watch the bugs show up and start feeding. Disaster capitalism is the ultimate goal for this country. Why don't we stop it? Why don't we stop it? Why are we willing to let this continue? It's amazing. Chris in Rhode Island writes, Mike, I signed the letter to the senators to support family farmers. Thanks, Chris. I'm just so upset about what is happening tonight. Just don't understand people's thinking about different issues. Just so frustrating tonight and sad what is happening to this country. I feel so powerless and depressed. I tried to talk to people about different issues, but that's like talking to brick walls. Chris in Rhode Island. Yeah, it is, isn't it? In so many instances, it is. It is. And from Jeanette, I was told I had insufficient funds today by the cashier at the grocery store when I tried to buy groceries. It came to $35 and something. I had $32 and something in my account. I had them take off one item and it went through. I get my next SSDI payment Wednesday. I have enough groceries now to last until then, and my gas tank is full. I wonder if Eric Cantor, Michelle Bachmoron, Rush Limbaugh, or the Koch brothers have ever not had enough money for $35 of groceries because their Social Security disability runs out before they get their next payment. The amount I get now is barely enough. Once they cut it, if more people get more desperate, we're going to see more desperate acts, like the guy who robbed the bank for a dollar so he could get medical care in prison. There will also be armed incidents. If domestic desperation isn't enough to make people crazy, there's the military-industrial complex and nukes. Oh, God. And from Tad in Vancouver, Washington, Mike, is it just me, or perhaps if our fearless Republican president's Justice Department open up criminal proceedings against individuals within S&P for collusion with the banks and Goldman Sachs, would we suddenly see a AAA rating appear with an apology for a mathematical oversight? We, of course, would need a president that gives a blank about all the people that aren't in the top 5%. Not that the Democrats were ever really interested in us. They only do just enough to keep our pitchforks busy pitching hay instead of being used as pikes, decorating all the entrances to Wall Street as a warning. Woo! Sorry, but I'm doing my best not to sound like an angry red out to destroy mom and apple pie, but this is as close I can seem to get lately. Tad in Vancouver, Washington. You know, they keep talking about all the anger that's out there as if the anger was amorphous and not focused. Granted, some of the anger is being totally redirected in the wrong direction. But, you know, until you have spent some time you know, among other things, this is just one way, doing a talk radio show, and you get the emails, and you see the depth of the, it's not anger, it's turning into fury. Because in a very kind of cavalier way now, every time I read something in the paper about how this recession, depression, whatever you want to call it, has ended so many jobs that are never coming back. And I see this line that the writer just kind of tosses in there and says, you know, there are a lot of unemployed people who are going to continue to be unemployed for a long time and perhaps forever. And I read that and I think, who has the balls to write something like that?
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. After the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia tonight. So, the bottom of the hour, Kathy will clear the lines and we'll open them up for podcast trivia. Breaking news from Prairie 2, the Fed, the FDIC, the Treasury Department, and other federal agencies have all issued statements disavowing the value of the S&P rating downgrade. Treasury claims that the numbers that S&P cites have trillions of dollars in errors. And this is from Dow Jones Wire Service. Standard & Poor's downgrade of the U.S. government's debt will not affect the risk-based capital requirements for U.S. banks, federal regulators said Friday evening. The Federal Reserve, FDIC, and other federal banking regulators said in a statement that the lowering of the U.S. government debt rating from AAA to AA+ will not change the risk weights for Treasury securities and other securities issued or guaranteed by the U.S. government or government agencies. Blah blah blah. Which means if the cockroaches play this right, it will not affect interest rates on our credit cards or outstanding debt or our mortgage balances or what have you. We'll see. You know, it'll probably be like the Delta Airlines and the rest of these airline sons of bitches who continued to collect the ticket tax, even though the government was incapable, when the FAA was put on hiatus, the government was incapable of collecting it itself, and therefore the tax should have been stopped immediately, and it would have been maybe a 10%, 15% break to airline passengers in the cost of their ticket. But did the airlines do that? Stop it, Malloy. Are you kidding? Did the airlines do that? They pocketed the money. In other words, they stole tax money. Now, you go steal tax money, Truth Seeker, and maybe you can listen to this program from a federal penitentiary. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how's it going, buddy? Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
You know, I've been a listener ever since the Air America days. I've got you on my speed dial. I've talked to you many times.
Yes, sir.
I just keep changing the number, would you say?
I hear you.
But, yeah, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. I mean, you know, that whole debacle can be laid at the feet of the Michelle Bachmanns and Eric Kanders and
right.
Bond Poners and all these people for this whole debacle here with the Standard & Poor's thing. But, they're not really that important. Standard & Poor's, those criminals over there, just like Moody's and the rest of them, they're kind of like, J.D. Power and Car and Driver magazine, you know, that these ratings of theirs don't really mean anything except to people that, you know, that take this investing as a serious game, you know what I'm saying?
Well, and you know what? It should mean something in a negative way, because Standard & Poor's gave all these credit default operations or credit default swap operations,
yeah.
Which meant a lot of people put up money hoping that the companies they were putting money into were capitalized.
Yeah, actually had money to back it.
Right, and Standard & Poor's said, yeah, come on, here, let me show you the way down this primrose path.
I know what you're saying, but see, they're part of the criminal establishment, which is what I really wanted to talk about, is about the stock market. I mean, in all the years that I've talked to you, I've always told you and your listeners, I said, if you've got 401ks and you know your money's coming out of your job going into those things for a retirement fund, do not put it in the stock market.
Yeah.
Put it in a fixed income fund, you know, where it'll make a steady 5 or 6% per year. Just
right.
Keep spot on with that, because this is what they do. This last thing they had where the stock market dropped 512
mm-hmm,
points,
mm-hmm.
That accumulated to a week of losses that made, you know, there was actually 10%, over 10% of the money in the stock market just vanished.
Right.
It went into the pockets of these people that play the market.
Right.
And that is, the corporations, the bigwigs, CEOs, our elite leaders, they skim it that way. And here's how they do it. They have computer trades. They do it as the market moves incrementally. They buy and sell huge chunks of stock. And you know, when they end up done, they've got all the money, because you and I that had money in 401k plans or something like that, if for us to move our money from one stock to another or from one plan to another,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't take effect until the end of a business day if you put it in the morning.
Well, you pretty much got to rely on your fund manager when you have your money in a 401k.
Yeah, but the fund manager's the same people.
Well, I understand. That's what I'm saying. So, it's a terrible situation. I remember when 401ks first came out, and I thought they sounded pretty good, not realizing that it was just more money that these casino capitalist bastards in Wall Street had to play with.
Exactly. And those same people that run those funds were actually selling you stuff they knew was no good.
Right.
I mean, they did. So, people need to wake up to this and just say, don't put any money in the market. I called everybody I knew in the last 2 weeks ago saying, if you've got any money in stocks now, liquidate it. Put it in a fixed income fund right now. And here we are, 2 weeks later, we're 10% lost in the stock. That money's, that's $2 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
That's just gone.
I know.
And that's people's retirement plans.
And this just, the hell of it is, Mike, it just keeps happening and happening and happening. And the fools in this society, it used to be people like me, maybe you. Just keep, the rabbits just keep putting money in there hoping, well, this time it'll be okay. Mike, I gotta leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate your call. 25 before the hour. Oh, there's that music again. Oh, good. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, once again for Podcast Trivia, where you can win a 1-year subscription to Molloy Program Podcast Downloads. Absolutely free. A retail value of $59.60. It's here for the asking. I do the asking. All you have to do is answer our trivia question correctly, and you win. So simple. All right. Who's first up, Kathy Bay? Well, it's Mark in El Paso. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. First of all, I enjoy your hold music.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right, Mark, are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's start the magic music here, Miss Producer, if you would, please. All right, Mark, here's the question. Wannabe presidential nominee and Christian nutball Michelle Bachmann was discussing energy legislation, and she was asked about her concern over the impact of global climate change on the planet. What was her response? Was it A, carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful, but there isn't even one study that can be produced that shows that carbon dioxide is a harmful gas? Was it B, it's just liberal propaganda, like the movie The Lion King was gay propaganda for Elton John? Was it C, creation teaches us that there was no evolution, no dinosaurs, so there is no such thing as a fossil fuel, silly? Or D, which planet?
Let's see here. I'm going to have to go with, let's see, A.
A? Carbon dioxide is portrayed as harmful. There isn't even one study. You're absolutely right. I like the last one. Which planet?
What planet is she on?
Global change on the planet. All right, Mark, you won. Congratulations, pal.
All right, buddy.
All right, hold on. Don't hang up. I'm going to put you on hold here, and Kathy will get the information necessary to make sure that your podcast comes through every day. By the way, the third hour tonight, I'm going to strip the flesh off of war criminal, murderer, torturer, and former Bush crime family Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. So do stick around for that. It'll be so much fun. Douglas is in Sacramento. Hello, Douglas.
Hello, Mike. I'm back.
Oh, well, good. How was your trip?
Terrific.
Good.
No, I called last night.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
Oh, that's right. You did. Hey, wait a minute. No, it's okay.
Yeah. I just want to be the first to restate the obvious about the Standard & Poor's thing. It's pure disaster capitalism.
Isn't it?
I mean, if I told you I had money to lend you when you needed it, but you had to follow my rules exactly, and that meant that you couldn't pay me back, and I would own you, what would you do?
Shoot your brains out?
If I was lucky, yeah.
Creep into your bedroom at night and hold a pillow over your head, I guess.
But that's exactly what's happening.
I know.
I mean, the rules they're talking about, they're exactly the rules that reduce, that contract the economy and reduce income.
That's right. That's right.
And, did you ever see Hal Holbrook do Mark Twain Tonight?
I have, years and years and years and years, 30 years ago, yes. I thought it was astonishing.
I remember something. He talked about how he saved the guy from a burning building. He was four stories up, mm-hmm. screaming for help. And I had this rope. I said, quick, tie this around you. And he did, and I pulled him down. You see where I'm going with this, Mike?
Yeah, I do.
Anything sound familiar?
It does. It sounds very familiar. You know, we've been warned about corporations all through the history of this country, and nobody paid any attention. And now we are where we are. And this Standard & Poor's thing, they have a political agenda that is driving this. And I don't know, man. When you have all these agencies come out as they did tonight within hours of this so-called downgrade, when you have Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Treasury, all these agencies say, wait a minute, there are trillions of dollars of errors in what Standard & Poor's did. You know, I would not be surprised, Douglas. You think things are crazy now? Wait till Monday when Standard & Poor's retracts their lowered bond rating and puts it back up to AAA. And at that point, I think they ought to go the way of, what are the accounting firms that were put out of business after the last financial scandal? What was the accounting firm that everybody, oh God, I'm drawing a blank.
Me too. I just blanked it out.
Well, if there is any justice, Standard & Poor's will be run out of business. And again, I hate to be in the position where it sounds like I am upset because another predatory or disaster capitalist organization has tried to screw the American public. This is, it's like screaming foul if you walk into a hungry lion's cage and the lion starts to eat you. I mean, what are you doing in the lion's cage to begin with? So anyway,
they kind of built the cage around us, but that's another story.
It is indeed. All right, Douglas, I got to move on. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. All right. No matter what sort of capitalism it is, and this is this is the part where 90% of the time I feel like I'm just whistling past the graveyard or peeing in the wind or whatever the expression is. Not to you. I know that you understand. But, the endless diatribes I go on against capitalism. And I certainly was brought up in a family, a time where capitalism was seen as not just the best economic system on earth, that's what we were told, but also a bulwark against, always had the modifier, godless communism. Yeah, I'm of that age. And capitalism was this bulwark, this wall of protection. That's how it was sold, I had no reason to challenge it ever. I had an immigrant grandfather that came from Italy who thought he was a capitalist. What he really was a small businessman. And he did damn well investing in capitalist enterprises. But he wasn't one. He was a small businessman. And he was of the, like so many immigrants, he was of the mindset that you didn't borrow money. And since you didn't borrow money, he was automatically leaving himself out of the capitalist system. But he never borrowed money. He used cash flow, he saved money, and then he invested in capitalist enterprises and he made a fortune. But he himself was not a capitalist. But he tried to inculcate that craziness into me when I was a little kid. Even though he spoke very broken English, he tried to let me know that capitalism and Christianity were he wasn't so much, that was my grandmother, it was the Christian crazy person, but that capitalism was the savior of mankind. Now, to him, coming to this country at age 14 from Italy at a time when Italy I don't think Italy had even been unified yet. I think it was still a matter of principalities and fiefdoms and, oh my God, that sounds like the Middle Ages. Now, he came before the turn of the century, right around the turn of the century, 1899, 1900, 1901, somewhere around there. And I don't think Italy had been unified into a republic yet, had it? I don't know. But, or whatever it was unified into. But he came from a society and a family and a class system that was just going straight down the tubes. People were starving. It was like Ireland in the 1830s or 1840s. People were starving to death. And you had this wave of non-whites. That's what my grandfather was. He was a non-white. This wave of colored people who came, the Sephardic Jews and the Italians and the Greeks and the Turks who came to this country. All the Mediterranean people who came to this country, and they were immediately classified as non-white. It's the truth. I don't mean they were classified by the government as non-white, but the Caucasians that were already here, the Northern Europeans, ooh, Lord have mercy. What am I talking about? I have no idea. The capitalism. But you know, the older I got, and I would think that the natural evolution of people is to experience capitalism, see how it works, see how it cyclically destroys everything. Just like a beast, it just devours and eats and rips and tears. And the collateral damage to all this are families and people. I've said for 20 years that the most anti-family operation on earth is capitalism. And people say, oh, you're out of your goddamn mind. You know, if it wasn't for capitalism, we wouldn't have any jobs. Think about what you're saying. That's like if I did have a hungry lion ready to eat me at any moment, I wouldn't have a pet. Oh, well, I don't mean to make it sound like I've been warning you. Nah, I haven't been warning anybody. I'm just, you know, I've said over and over and over again, I'm just a common person who understands that after the first time you lay your hand on a hot stove, you don't do it again. You learn from experience. You take a look at what's going on. You know, nobody told me, don't lay your hand on the hot stove. I had to find out myself. But Jesus God, am I going to do it a second, third, fifth, 20th time? Well, then why bow down to and accept capitalism? It continues to destroy us.
My soul for another. Learn not to complain anymore. Should I stay and pretend that I'm happy?
Is the outrage. Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
All right, thanks everybody who emailed me on that accounting firm I couldn't think of, Arthur Anderson, that went out of business. It was one of the premier accounting firms, but all the lies and deceptions, they were involved in the, in what, Enron? Doesn't matter. It's okay. I don't want to get into Arthur Anderson. I just couldn't think of it. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate it. All right. Let me do this. Prairie 2. They say the bites aren't fatal. Oh, God. The Dow blue chip stocks managed to recover from bad numbers in the morning, you know, after what happened yesterday, to finish up 60 points. But this is one of the few indexes to do so. The S&P, them again, and NASDAQ ended down. There was a 400-point swing in the Dow before and after the European Central Bank said it would intervene as necessary in Ireland, Portugal, and maybe Spain. Italy has called a meeting of the G7 countries to resolve the debt crisis. Italy's bond market or bond interest rates have gotten really out of hand as Wall Street bond predators circle for the kill. Goodbye, Italy. This mess could end the euro for no other reason than the existence of criminal bankers on Wall Street and in London. Yeah, let me digress. That's probably what's going to happen. The idea of a common European currency, a lot of people who were very, very bright at the time all those years ago said this is not going to work, and we're seeing the reason why it's not going to work. These countries need to be, once again, have their own sovereign of fund of money, be able to print their own money like we do. Okay, I think Prairie 2 is going to argue that one. But anyway, let me go on. Most commodities were up at the close today, and Treasury interest rates reflected a sigh of relief, with interest edging up slightly as people aren't moving as much cash there. Treasury interest rates are still incredibly low, and this puts the lie to right-wing claims that there is a debt crisis. 90-day T-bills only pay 0.0076% on 10-year bonds. And they're the basis for mortgage interest rates. And they're only paying 2.4%. The unemployment rate ticked down 1/10 with the creation of 153,000 private sector jobs in July. But minus 36,000 government workers slashed in red states gave a net gain of only 117,000. employed. I actually saw a business article that calls this the conservative recovery, since private sector jobs are increasing as government shrinks. I thought this was the socialist Obama's economic disaster. It's being said that half of the government layoffs were from the Minnesota hostage-taking by Republicans and should show up as new jobs next month as the Democratic governor in that state gave in to the needs of the rich and threw the middle class under the bus. In fact, you can't call this a recovery at all, since we need 250,000 jobs every month just to keep up with the population growth. To be fair to Obama, he's had 18 straight months of job growth, however anemic. Bush managed to have 8 years with no net gain in jobs, when he should have added 24 million. That happens to be how many people that are unemployed or underemployed right now. Those really bad job numbers for May and June have been revised, showing we gained 54,000 more jobs than we thought. The average length of unemployment has, however, reached 41 weeks, and this is a number never seen before. Even during the post-World War II years, when there were millions out of work, as the economy transitioned to peace, we didn't see anything like this. And they thought things were so bad, they elected Republicans to undo the New Deal. In 1947, with Republicans in veto-proof control of Congress, they attempted to restart the Depression. And even then, the time on unemployment was still only a small fraction of what Republicans have achieved this time. The deliberate attempt to drive down wages by the major corporations is reflected in the high weekly initial unemployment claim, still hovering around 400,000. This is being considered the new normal break-even point, even though this is half again what was normal in the pre-Bush crash, in the pre-Bush crash economy. Family income was up slightly in June, suggesting that wages may be improving. Unfortunately, increased savings more than ate up the extra income, which isn't good for the economy. This is the curse of recessions. The virtue of saving is actually a bad thing. This is why the most effective tool for economic stimulus is to give more money to the people on the bottom rung, who can be counted on to spend it. The worst thing you can do is give it to people at the top who not only won't spend it, they don't even invest it, but will pay a bank just to keep it for them in cash. Major banks are now charging multi-million dollar depositors to hold cash for them. Small depositors still get a token interest payment. It's like getting a mint on the pillow at the hotel with the bed bugs. Prairie2.com. All right. That's enough economics for tonight. Let's see what happens. We'll revisit this on Monday for sure. This is like watching one of those old Snidely Whiplash silent movies serialized that you saw at the YMCA every Saturday afternoon, right? I just can't wait to, I want to see Snidely's ass get run over by the train. Not the little girl who's trying to save her aging grandpa's farm. I want to see her jump up and run and Snidely trip and the train just crush his brains out right on the street. You know what I'm saying? Or on the railroad bed. So we'll see what happens. Coming up next hour, I've got former defense secretary and unindicted war criminal and mass killer, not to mention torture, Donald Rumsfeld, right in my sights. And stick around for a real ass whipping. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. week's program and all next week, brought to you by Farm Aid 2011 and BioWilly Biodiesel. Go to the website, farmaid.org. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This has been sitting on the stack here, so to speak, for a long time. And, you know, I used to have doubts about the authenticity of this quote. But as near as I can gather, it is it was something that Abraham Lincoln said in a letter to a Colonel William Elkins on November 21, 1864. I just thought I'd toss it in. It's not specifically pertinent to anything we've been talking about tonight, but I just want to throw it in. This is the quote from Abraham Lincoln. I see in the near future a crisis approaching that unnerves me and causes me to tremble for the safety of my country. As a result of the war, corporations have been enthroned, and an era of corruption in high places will follow. And the money power of the country will endeavor to prolong its reign by working upon the prejudices of the people until all wealth is aggregated in the hands, in a few hands, and the republic is destroyed. I feel at this moment more anxiety for the safety of my country than ever before, even in the midst of war. God grant that my suspicions may prove groundless. So, like I say, as near as I know, that is an authentic quote. I know that the framers of the Constitution had the same doubts about the power of corporations. And now we have a Supreme Court that has declared, in essence, several months back, that corporations are equal in equal to humans insofar as destroying democracy. We destroy it by not participating. Well, I think it's too late now. I mean, participating in the form that we have, we can always participate. But I think the participation we need right now is in reshaping, reforming our entire system of self-governance, economic as well as political. Huh? You think? Boy, that's scary, isn't it? Anyway, and last night, I wanted to get to this, but we ran out of time, about a federal judge who has ruled that war criminal and former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld can be sued personally, civil suit, for damages by a former U.S. military contractor who says he was tortured during the time he was imprisoned in Iraq. Now, why was he imprisoned in Iraq? Go figure. He is a man who speaks five languages. He worked as a translator for the United States Marine Corps, collecting intelligence in Iraq. And his attorneys say he was preparing to come home to the U.S. on annual leave when he was abducted by the U.S. military and held without justification in Iraq while his family knew nothing about where he was or even whether or not he was still alive. And the U.S. originally said he was suspected. When I say the U.S., I mean the U.S. government or the Defense Department or the State Department or the military commanders in Iraq or somebody. I don't know. I hate that term, just like I hate the term. The White House says, you know, a building doesn't talk, for Christ's sake. Neither does the bureaucracy. But, you know, this is all I've got. The government says he was suspected of helping pass classified information to the enemy. Who was the enemy in Iraq? Very quickly. There was no Al-Qaeda in Iraq. That didn't exist. Who was the enemy in Iraq? Was it perhaps the Sunnis who were involved in a more rational time, if there's ever rationality in that kind of a conflict, a more rational time would have been described as counter-revolutionaries. Who is the enemy? Quick, 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 quick. Anybody got an answer? Quick, who is the enemy? That's what it says here, the Associated Press. The government says this man was suspected of helping pass classified information to the enemy. Who? Who is the enemy? Whistleblowers? I know Julian Assange was the enemy. No, let me think. New York Times was the enemy. No, let me think. No, they were partners in crime. Well, for a while. Who is the enemy? Insurgents? So people that are resisting invasion, occupation, and destruction of their country, that they become the enemy. Well, obviously, not to push the point here. It just pisses me off. The enemy passing classified information to the enemy. And he was also charged with helping anti-coalition forces get into Iraq. Now, what does that mean? Helping anti-coalition forces. He was helping someone other than the invader, that's us, get into Iraq. Who could that have been? Suicide bombers? People who were willing to die to get the invader out of Iraq? I don't know. It doesn't say. Helping anti-coalition forces get into Iraq. However, and this is a line I like, he was never charged with a crime. And he says he never broke the law and was risking his life to help his country. His country is the U.S.? Never broke the law. The military held him. He was never charged with a crime. When they abducted him, he was suspected. Do you like that word, suspected? Not indicted, not charged with, suspected. Jesus, so a lot of people listening to this program suspect I'm a raving lunatic, which I may well be. But suspecting someone of something and actually charging them with a crime, of course, I understand. When military justice is the prevailing system of justice, suspecting somebody can result in their being abducted, held, and tortured. It's very simple. I mean, that's the way it works in war, right? I guess. Although there have been many warriors, at least on a command and control level, who insisted that torture was off the table. But you know, you get down around the field commanders, down around the mid-level officers, down around the, even below that, get into some of the non-coms, and you finally find where torture's not off the table at all. As a matter of fact, it becomes an effective tool to break. Not to get information, but to destroy. Right? So this guy, whose name is being left out of it here for fear of retaliation, this guy says he was repeatedly tortured while being held at Camp Cropper, U.S. military facility near the Baghdad airport. That airport was dedicated to holding so-called high-value detainees. Not sure what that means either. I guess that means Saddam Hussein government employees. And then this man was suddenly released without explanation in August of 2006, 5 years ago. 2 years later, he filed a suit in U.S. District Court in Washington, arguing that Rumsfeld personally approved torturous interrogation techniques on a case-by-case basis. And Rumsfeld controlled his detention without access to courts in violation of his constitutional rights. Now, does that sound like something that a U.S. Secretary of Defense would do? I mean, approve torture techniques on a case-by-case basis? Does that seem like something that a glorious United States of America Secretary of Defense would do? Yeah, as a matter of fact, it does, doesn't it? Matter of fact, it's just about now become SOP. We'll be right back.
much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So Rumsfeld, war criminal, unindicted war criminal, of the most severe sort, the type of war criminal who transcends national boundaries. He is a war criminal that should be hunted down and brought to trial no matter where he goes, by those countries on earth that can still consider themselves to be even partly civilized. Of course, that is a very short list, since most countries on earth still believe in organized killing of people from other countries on earth. You know, the madness. But anyway, Rumsfeld charged with personally approving torture techniques on a case-by-case basis and controlling the detention of people busted in Iraq that Rumsfeld might have wanted to have tortured. And the latest is an American former U.S. military contractor who worked as a translator for the United States Marines collecting intelligence in Iraq. The attorney for this man says it appears the military wanted to keep his client behind bars so he couldn't tell anyone about an important contact he had made with a leading sheikh while helping collect intelligence in Iraq. Now, we're left to speculate what that, you know, what was said, what information the intelligence officer, who is now suing Rumsfeld, what that information was. It must have been fairly important to somebody if the result of getting that information was the man who got it, our guy, was locked up and tortured. Jesus, God. Locked up and tortured. The attorney in Chicago said in a telephone interview with the Associated Press, quote, the U.S. government wasn't ready for the rest of the world to know about this information or this contact, so they basically put my client on ice. If you've got unchecked power over citizens, why not use it? How's that for a chilling, frightening statement? If you have unchecked power, why not use it? And I don't think, I'm not an historian, and my knowledge of war history and the tactics used by various nations when they do find themselves at war is limited. But I would be willing to guess that Donald Rumsfeld is probably the most criminal Secretary of Defense this country has ever employed. I cannot think. Can you? Help me if you can. I can't think of any international law or convention or agreement to which the United States was a signatory that was not violated by Rumsfeld, working in cahoots, of course, with the Bush crime family. The Geneva Conventions, international agreements, UN agreements on the treatment of prisoners, the treatment of non-combatants, torture and interrogation techniques, even as the Nuremberg trials or commissions established after World War II, that the most serious crime, the one that is absolutely has to be punished, the most egregious crime that can be committed on the world stage is the invasion of a country by another, especially without provocation. That there is no other crime more serious or one that supersedes that. A war of opportunity, call it whatever you want. So our own judicial system that was imposed on the Germans and the Nazi high command after World War II, our own system identified the most egregious, the most horrific crime that could be committed. And Rumsfeld and Cheney and Bush committed it. And what happened to them? Nothing. There was a Nuremberg Commission, a Nuremberg crimes investigation, but there was no equal counterpart after what we did in Iraq. Are the two equivalent? No. Is the murder of 10 people equivalent to the murder of one? No. Does murder still occur in both instances? Yes. So what do we do? A judge has said that Rumsfeld can be sued for monetary damages, I guess. A little bit more on this when we come back. This has just been something I've been wanting to get out, and that's why I'm getting it out. Stay with us.
You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war, 'cause we know what you're fighting for. Oh, oh, this world is not your toy.
Conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Okay, I'm just about done with this war criminal Rumsfeld thing. Federal judges ruled that he can be sued personally for damages by a former U.S. military contractor who says he was tortured during a 9-month imprisonment in Iraq. Now, given all I've said up to this point, who do you think is backing Rumsfeld in this lawsuit? Well, you know who's backing Rumsfeld in this lawsuit. The Obama administration has represented Rumsfeld through the Justice Department, and Barack Obama and Eric Holder, two executive officers of the U.S. government, whom liberals in this country, especially liberals who claim to be liberals anyway, in media, those liberals in media claim that Obama and Holder are liberals themselves or progressives or whatever the current word is. It's all BS, and you know it as well as I do, right? That Obama, that Eric Holder, they are representing and throwing the full weight of the United States government behind the defense of a war criminal, of a war criminal. Go figure. Now, why do you suppose that is happening? Huh? Is it because the Obama administration doesn't want to set a dangerous precedent? Dangerous precedent. What's the dangerous precedent? If you are an executive of the United States and you authorize and review and select those people to be tortured, why, regardless of your political party or your political stance, why would this country want to defend you? You are a goddamn criminal. You are a lawbreaker of, according to the Nuremberg Trials Commission, of the most egregious kind. And yet you find people in American media, so-called liberals, who persist in defending an administration that defends a war criminal. How do you do that? How do they do that? How do so-called liberals or progressives do that? How do you do that? How do you say, oh, okay, well, look, you know, everybody's picking on Obama, but, you know, I'm going to defend him because he really is a Democrat and a liberal and a progressive. Really? Is that how we identify Democrats, liberals, progressives, Americans any longer? Are those people who defend war criminals or are, in fact, themselves war criminals? Wow, man. Weird, huh? The Obama administration and the Justice Department argue that Rumsfeld cannot be sued personally for official conduct. Oh, I see. It's kind of a hair-splitting thing. If that's the case, then what did we do? We didn't sue for damages after World War II. We didn't. We sued for their very lives, the people who committed war crimes during World War II, didn't we? Japanese, Germans. How about Italians? Do we? Of course, the Italians took care of their own war criminals. Remember the pictures of Mussolini and his girlfriend, his lover, his whatever. Remember those pictures? You can find them online. There are pictures of Mussolini and his mistress hanging upside down from a lamppost in Rome. I think it was Rome, after being beaten to death by an enraged mob. So justice is as justice does. In this case, Donald Rumsfeld, who arguably, in a different time, different place, would have been dragged into the streets and beaten to death much the same way that Mussolini was, Rumsfeld, the war criminal, is defended by Barack Obama's Justice Department. Does that mean anything, or is that just meaningless? The Obama Justice Department is also arguing that a judge cannot review wartime decisions that are the constitutional responsibility of Congress and the president. Really? Constitutional responsibility of the Congress. The United States Congress has not declared the United States to be at war, as authorized by the Constitution, since December 10th? 9th? 1941. 70 years it's been since there has been any congressional constitutional responsibility where it concerns war on the part of the United States. And yet the Obama administration is now saying, well, you know, all those decisions, you know, you can't challenge a wartime decision. War? This wasn't war. This was murder. The Bush crime family didn't declare war on Iraq as per the U.S. Constitution. They were like thieves in the night, like sons of bitches, like breakers and enterers. They entered another country and murdered hundreds of thousands of people. And Donald Rumsfeld was one of the architects of that mass murder. So now Barack Obama and Eric Holder are going to say that this son of a bitch cannot be sued because wartime decisions that are the constitutional responsibility of the Congress and the president cannot be challenged in a court of law. Well, isn't that convenient? Oh, and the Justice Department says that this case, if it did go to trial, which it may or may not, could disclose, here we go, sensitive information and could distract from the war effort. And that the threat of liability would impede future military decisions. Wow. But the decision to invade Iraq was not a military decision. In fact, speaking off the record, most flag rank military commanders will tell you that the decision to invade Iraq was insane. Madness. So look at how the great liberal, progressive, democratic Obama administration is twisting everything. Law, international treaties, logic, the U.S. Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, just into the goddamn garbage can. Just gone! And yet, the Obama administration... Oh, I know you're getting tired of this, aren't you? But if you're that tired of hearing this, then switch your radio dial to something else. Because this is truth. It's not my truth. I'm just talking about it. It is the truth. Any trial against the murderer and war criminal, Donald Rumsfeld, carries with it the threat that such liability on the part of executive officers of the United States, civilian executive officers, would impede future military decisions. Oh, my. Well, we can't have that. The Bush 2 doctrine is involves wars of opportunity. If you see an open door, go in and commit, you know, someone's house, so to speak, go in and commit rape, murder, mayhem, disruption, destruction, you know, invade and occupy. Take what you want, smash everything up, destroy the society. Oh, hang the leader. Definitely hang the leader. Usually the leaders of those countries who invade are former allies that have become useless. So do that. My, my, my. The U.S. District Judge rejected those arguments and said United States citizens, which this guy who's filing the lawsuit is, United States citizens are protected by the Constitution at home or abroad during wartime. Gwynn wrote in his ruling, quote, the court finds no convincing reason that United States citizens in Iraq should or must lose previously declared substantive due process protections during prolonged detention in a conflict zone abroad, end quote, which simply means that once the full force and weight of the United States military, the United States government, the United States law enforcement, once that full force comes down on your ass, you still have constitutional protections. If you don't, then let's take the Fourth Amendment and throw it in the goddamn street, along with our disrespect for other laws that we break now whenever we want to.
Unasked, won't you join in and fight with the Allies? What could we say? We're only 25 years old, with 25 sweet summers and hot fires in the cold. This kind of life makes that unthinkable. We'd like to play hockey, have kids and grow.
Before the hour, federal judges ruled that Rumsfeld can be sued personally for ordering the torture of a U.S. citizen, a military contractor, who was held without any formal charges for months in Iraq. He is an Army veteran in his 50s whose identity is being withheld from court filings for fear of retaliation. Isn't that interesting? Fear of retaliation from whom? Who could possibly retaliate? you know, usually when you watch the old movies on Turner Classic Movies, you know, the gangster movies, the film noir from the 40s and 50s, when you watch those movies and you know, somebody, some gang leader gets busted, right? And the camera, the scene is all dark and the guy is sitting there in a jail cell and his lawyer comes to see him and the thug says, all right, you know, who ratted me out? Oh, it was Malloy? All right, I want him taken care of, you hear? And, you know, the lawyer nods his head, and, you know, within 10 minutes of the film, Malloy is shot dead. Retaliation. So who's going to retaliate against a 50-year-old former Army veteran, former member of the U.S. military, a civilian contractor, who worked as a translator for the U.S. Marine Corps collecting intelligence in Iraq? Who is going to retaliate against him for filing a lawsuit against Rumsfeld because Rumsfeld authorized this man to be tortured? Who's going to retaliate? Think now. Put your thinking caps on. Who's it going to be? Yeah, I don't know either. I got my thinking cap on. I have no idea who could retaliate. But his identity is being kept out of the filings to prevent such retaliation. Where do we live? In other cases brought by foreign detainees, not U.S. citizens, not former U.S. Army personnel, not American translators who are working to get intelligence to assist in our continuing occupation and murder trip in Iraq, but foreign detainees. In other cases brought by foreign detainees, judges have dismissed torture claims made against U.S. officials where it concerned their personal involvement in decisions over prisoner treatment. But this is the second time a federal judge has allowed a U.S. citizen to sue Rumsfeld personally. Last year in Illinois, U.S. District Judge Wayne Anderson said two other Americans who worked in Iraq as contractors and were held at Camp Cropper, Donald Vance and Nathan Ertel, can pursue claims that they were tortured using Rumsfeld-approved methods after they alleged illegal activities by their company. Whistleblowers. Whistleblowers. Rumsfeld is appealing that ruling. So, I had a stat, when was it, last night or the night before, that the Obama administration has now been involved in more prosecutions of whistleblowers than all other presidential, executive branch decisions together. The Obama administration is going after more whistleblowers than all administrations in modern history taken together. He's a liberal? Didn't Obama say the whistleblowers would be listened to when he got elected? Or am I just imagining that? I don't know anymore. I also think I heard Obama say that where it concerned organized labor, he would find a pair of comfortable shoes and walk the picket line with the workers. That's really happened, hasn't it? But Obama is a progressive. He's a liberal. He's a Democrat. Sure he is. Abso-goddamn-lutely. And the moon is made of green cheese. And someday all the good Christians are going to go naked and fly up into heaven to meet their Redeemer. How lawless does a society have to be? And I may have this question totally inverted. Before it allows its highest civilian officers to be exempt from the law. Or, reversed, how many executive officers of the country need to be exempt from the law before the society becomes totally lawless. Let's use that version. I don't know the answer to that. I just know what the U.S. and our allies took great pains and great expense and an enormous amount of time to prove subsequent to World War II, that just following orders didn't work, that there were crimes against humanity that had to be prosecuted because they were so egregious. And now we have a former Secretary of Defense, war criminal, who is being allowed to walk free and who is being defended by the Obama administration. What do you call that? What do you call that? I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.